my last K. All right, good morning. Some of us were here last night. Raise your hands. How many of you were here last night until 11:30? Until 11:30, yes. Yeah, I know Amy was, and right. Julie was. Yeah, there's Amy. Julie was, yes. And Mark was, yes. It's nice, and Dave was. It's nice to be back here less than 11 hours later, 10. It was the ABAG discussion about the building. Yes. Let's deal with that later. I think it was a positive outcome. And people can interpret that in different ways. Right, Julie? It was positive. Mr. President, it was positive? Right. All right. Okay. Do we do call? Do we normally roll call? Do we have to roll call? Yes. We do? What is roll call?
No, just
call? Okay. So we do have a quorum present. We will start. First item is the approval of our Joint Policy Committee meeting minutes of November 16th, and we have minutes. There's a motion and a second by Napa folks. Napa's right on top of it today because you weren't here late last night. That's why. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? All right. Item 3 is a report from our JPC Executive Committee meeting from last week. We actually had a very productive meeting, and a couple of items came out of that. So Jean from the Air District will give the report out on the air quality and infill development guidelines issue.
Good morning, Chair Joya and members of the JPC. So very briefly, the Air District staff has been working with regional agency staff and local planners on developing some planning guidance for cities and counties on air quality and infill development. And more research is showing that there are health effects from living and having activities near sources, very near sources of air pollution. And it's an issue that is becoming more and more on the forefront. EPA is now requiring us to do air monitoring near roadways in particular. And yet, it's very important in this region that we pursue infill development, very essential for our air quality goals, our climate goals, and other transportation goals, and other healthy community and vibrancy issues. So we've been trying to think of a way to help cities and counties think about these things at the same time to make sure we can support infill development and also make sure we have healthy communities. So we've developed a concept with regional agency partners and a small group of local planners that we then want to take to get feedback from others. And it's really a system of set distances from sources of pollution and best practices within those set distances. So it's something that we think will be fairly straightforward and easy to implement, but we want to test that out by getting more feedback. And so we talked about this with the executive committee, and they were supportive with the idea that we are going to be going out and getting more input from planners and stakeholders and builders and developers and other interested health people from around the region. So it's really just an update to let you know that we're working on this process. We hope that it will be a methodology that the cities can embrace. We hope to get input from them so that it can be something they can embrace. It could be something that would happen sort of earlier in the process. General plans, specific plans, development guidelines, as opposed to the end-of-the-line CEQA process. So that's an update. Be glad to hear your thoughts, and we'll keep you updated as the process unfolds.
Great. Any questions on that? Okay. The second item, which is the one that will probably take a bit more discussion, is the issue of the regional economic development strategy. And in your package, there is a summary of Berea Business Coalition Joint Policy Committee meeting, which was in early December. And I'm just going to briefly read from that just to set the context. On December 3rd, 9 representatives from the JPC met, and these were mostly staff agencies, these were all staff, not JPC members, met with 9 members of the Berea Business Coalition. And the meeting had 2 purposes. First, to give the business community an opportunity to provide early input on its goals and concerns as the Joint Policy Committee works to prepare the Bay Area for climate change impacts. And second, to learn the views of the business community on what elements should be included in a regional economic development strategy. And as everyone recalls, we here have not yet decided what role, if any, the JPC should play in formulating a regional economic development strategy. So maybe the first thing is let us have, and then we had some discussion at the executive committee, which we can summarize, but why don't we first have one of the staff just briefly summarize this meeting with the Business Coalition in early December. Will, do you want to do that? And then we can get into the discussion and sort of what the recommendation was for here. I think you have to turn it on first. And I think you all have to turn your mics on first by pushing a little button on the right side before the power will go on. So there's like a button on the right side.
Clearly you chose a good chair. He knows how to use the electronic equipment. It was a fascinating meeting that we had, and one of the, two of the main recommendations that came from the Business Coalition is they have a consensus position that the Bay Area needs an economic development strategy. They believe that the business community is best prepared to prepare such a strategy. They think that this should be done under the auspices of the Bay Area Council Economic Institute. They also believe that the Institute's Board of Trustees would serve as an ideal forum for providing advice to you on business matters. So those were their two recommendations. As Chair Gioia mentioned, there was a lively discussion about this at the executive committee. Some of the issues that were raised were this recommendation came from the Business Coalition, but there was nobody there from the Bay Area Council Economic Institute, so we don't know if they agree with it. And secondly, providing special status, as it were, for one of the E's, the economic community, without providing a special similar status for the environmental or the equity community, and do you really need to have three advisory boards? So the conclusion and recommendation that comes from your executive committee is that you should invite the Bay Area Council Economic Institute and the Business Coalition to come to your next meeting and make a presentation as to what exactly they have in mind, and then thoughtfully discuss this before deciding to move ahead with either endorsing their ideas or looking at alternatives. Right. So with that...
So that's a good summary of the discussion. So that's what's on the table is the recommendation to invite the business representatives to our next meeting to hear their thoughts directly to the large group here. So that we could then have an informed discussion about what role, if any, we want to play on the development of a regional economic strategy. But there was also sentiment expressed, as Will says, about the importance of also having the environmental and equity communities involved as well. You know, remember when we've worked on other regional issues here, it was always the three E's, economic, equity, and environmental. So that's the issue. And so really, is there any discussion or agreement about whether to invite the Barry Economic Institute, the Barry, Business Coalition here at our next meeting to have a discussion about that, to hear a presentation and have a discussion? The thoughts? Mary?
There you go. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry, you gave directions earlier, and I guess I wasn't paying attention. I think since everything that we do policy-wise has an effect on the economy, it would be really a poor decision not to have that input at this time on the future direction, considering climate change and its effect on the environment. So I believe them to be synonymously linked, and one without the other would be really missing the boat. And I don't know if there's a recommended...
You agree with the idea of inviting them. The recommendation is to invite them here for exactly that purpose, is to hear from them. They make a presentation, and we have a discussion.
Yeah, if there's... I don't see any recommended language or action before, so it's
right.
kind of high elevation, so I don't know if there's any specific language you would like, but in general, I think it would be very important for us to have that conversation.
Right. Okay. Other comments? Hey, Scott, I feel rested. I feel, after last night, I feel good. It's good to see you this morning. Yeah, if there's no other discussion, if there's a motion.
Sure, John,
and yes, Tom?
I'm sorry. Well, I'm not opposed to it. I think it's a good idea, but I'm wondering if it's at the same time we shouldn't consider some input from those other two groups at that same meeting.
Well, I was going to get to that point. I think if we go forward with this, we obviously would invite them to be here at that, be others, these are public meetings, to invite the others to be here because we're going to want to hear about that. So we would specifically invite the same folks that were at the December meeting with the staff to come make a presentation, but ensure that folks from the Environmental and Equity Committee know about this as well and can be here.
Okay, I agree with Mary that we want to make sure that as we move forward,
like
yourself, that we bring all of those people to the table, because one without the other is like
Correct.
A three-leg stool.
Right.
We need all three legs.
I think what we were going to hear from the business community is they specifically had this idea that they wanted to have the Economic Institute be in charge of a regional economic development strategy. The issue for us is what role we should play. And I think you suggested, in fact, last year, Tom, that JPC should play some role. And the question is for us to have that discussion here, what their thought was, but in the context of also hearing from the other E's, right? So did you want to make a motion on that, Jim?
Yeah, I'm going to second Mary's motion,
okay.
Mr. Chairman,
right.
that we ask the two organizations to make a presentation at our next meeting.
Right. Ensuring
yes.
that the representatives from the equity and environmental community are here as well, because they're going to want to hear that same presentation and participate in that discussion. I think that's really important as well.
That was my motion. Thank you, Chair.
I second it.
All right.
Thank you.
Motion a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any against it? Okay. Dave? Yeah, I think you have to push this button on the right first.
Anyway, this one works.
There it is.
I just was going to ask on the motion, just an informational question. Is it intended that there be relative geographic balance in terms of the representation of the people coming in? I guess as a South Bay person, we're a stepchild.
Yeah, and we'll talk about who was there. I think actually, just to be clear, the folks that were at this December meeting did include folks from the South Bay. In fact, I'm looking at the footnote, Dave. It lists the individuals so I assume those would be the individuals that would be invited, Will?
Well, we would invite the Business Coalition to make a presentation. In all likelihood, they'd have one person doing that presentation. But one of the issues that came up at the Executive Committee is, what is the representation on the Bay Area Council Economic Institute's Board of Trustees? Is it geographically diverse? And we will look into that.
Just, familiarity and sentiments with issues down there. You and I had a conversation recently, Will, about just, some of the interests down the South Bay that have been percolating up about waterfront issues and things like that that are probably relatively new. And it's just helpful to have people familiar with those issues, so especially for me, it's not magnanimous.
Clearly, in order for this to work, there needs to be representation from the business community from all geographic regions of the Bay Area. And the other point that was made is that we just don't want, while we respect the staff of these organizations, the importance of having CEOs and the business community directly involved, especially at the CEO level, not just the staff of the agencies.
Right, exactly. I agree. Thank you.
Okay, so Julie.
John? Yeah, having attended several of the, all of this last year's Bay Area Economic Council, Economic Institute meetings, I can tell you that the folks who show up there are largely CEOs or very, very high-up executives, and they are probably equally weighted around the Bay Area, more San Francisco and Silicon Valley, but a lot of folks from the San Jose area, quite a few folks from East Bay. I'm pretty impressed with that group, and they don't send staff. They come and they do the reading themselves and they do the discussion themselves. So it's one of those bodies that actually has some pretty heavy hitters in the room for every meeting. And it's an interesting dialogue when you sit in between and breaks and things and hear what they're talking about. They've got some real knowledge to impart, so I think they could be a big help.
Thank you. And so that meeting would be on March 15th, so the way folks can plan ahead for that. And it sounds like this will be will occupy the largest part of that meeting, so we should maybe just be aware of that. I mean, I think that's going to be an important discussion. Okay, anything else on that? Item 4 is our regular briefing on our JPC climate change projects. Apologize, didn't turn that off. And Bruce.
Good morning. While staff is coming up and settling in, because this is going to be a joint presentation, let me give you just a few FYIs. We always like you to not go away empty-handed here, so we have a couple for you this morning. The first is an article, 6 pages, not 60, as sometimes the New Yorker runs on to, but a 6 page called Adaptation. That is highly recommended, and we have a copy. We'll pass it out at the end of our presentation. It's by a sociologist by name of Eric Klenenberg, who's done a lot of work on the Chicago heat wave in 1995, which killed about 740 people, about 740 heat-related deaths above the average month in Chicago from that big heat wave. And he's done some very interesting work, which he talks about in here, as well as talking about Sandy and post-Sandy in New York, in terms of infrastructure, yes, but also in terms of community resilience. And the absolute importance that they found in the research over looking at disasters around this country of community networks, social cohesion, what we used to call neighborhood friendliness, knowing who your neighbors are, having extended family nearby, and those issues and how important they are to becoming a more resilient community for the climate impacts that are here and are coming. It's a very interesting article that is only 6 pages, and we highly recommend it. And we'll pass that one out. We did not pass out, or we won't pass out, the 1,146-page National Climate Assessment. This is the most documented and thorough assessment of climate impacts and climate science yet in the U.S. It was just released in draft form last week. We are going to put it on our website, and we'll put the executive summary on our website and maybe email that to you, since that's 12 out of the 1,146 pages. But it does quite a good job of summarizing with good charts and graphs what we know about climate change, what's happened already in the U.S., and then regionally, including California. What are the projections? What are the impacts we're seeing already? There's an entire chapter on impacts on transportation. There are entire sections on infrastructure impacts, on impacts on natural systems, on human health, a whole set of things. So we'll send you we'll put it on the JPC website, which you can see on the screen is our new website, and we have places now to put this kind of information. We'll also email you the the executive summary. The third, Will Travis, who's slowly edging out the door, January 30th, last day for Will working with the JPC, but as going away gifts. Trav has been giving some of us John Englander's book, High Tide on Main Street, and I've started going through my copy finally, and it's really quite good. As Trav has said before, nothing terribly new, but presented in a very straightforward way that you get the urgency of the issues around extreme storms and sea level rise and the coastal impacts. I'll pass this one around. And it's also highly recommended. We do not have copies for everyone. And the last one, since we talked about cap and trade in California at our last meeting, and Michael McCormick, who's here from the state, and we'll talk a little bit about it this morning, and that way of raising revenue while you're reducing GHGs, the other approach is a carbon tax. I will pass around a short article. You could Google it if you want. That is on Ireland's carbon tax. Ireland, of all places, has put in a carbon tax, a very, I'd say, aggressive carbon tax on new cars, on energy used in the home, on how much you're recycling versus how much is going into landfill, and they're charging you more for putting more into landfill. You know, a whole set of things that are both reducing GHGs within the country measurably and raising a ton of revenue. And it's the latter reason that Ireland did this. They were in such bad shape economically. They are raising billions through their carbon tax. It's certainly an issue that's being looked at more here now and more on the table. I'll pass that article around, and if you want to see that one, you could make a note and find it on the web. So that's our four FYIs. Let me get the slides up here. So we have a joint presentation for you this morning. We have Joe LeClaire from BCDC, Daniel Hutchings Miller from ABAG, Brenda Dix from MTC, and then we'll be joined by Michael McCormick from the governor's office. 2013, for better or for worse, is going to be a big year for climate adaptation and for climate adaptation activities. At the state level, Michael can tell you some of the things in a few minutes that the state is planning or already putting in motion in terms of climate adaptation. We're hearing rumblings, and I told this to the executive committee last week, we're hearing significant rumblings about legislation at the state level this year that would complement AB 32, which is all about reducing GHGs, and there would be legislation this year at the state level very possibly around climate adaptation and climate adaptation planning. Met with Phil Duffy, who just came back as serving a year in the White House as their climate expert in the Office of Science and Technology, and Phil is reporting there's a tremendous amount of federal work brewing on climate adaptation, and we will be seeing quite a bit more from the feds this year on adaptation. And certainly locally, I'll talk in a minute when we do our updates, we're hearing and seeing, and so are my colleagues here, a lot of interest at the local level here among cities and counties and special districts and the private sector and all in accelerating our planning around climate adaptation. We wish we could say the same thing about GHG reduction. California is certainly doing some interesting things on that, and Michael maybe can mention a few. But we're working on adaptation, and adaptation is going to be much more front and center in 2013. So what we bring you this morning is our collective response to this, to the seriousness of the situation that we find ourselves in the U.S. and in California. We are here to talk about a real change that we're going to make at the staff level to not only coordinate our work on the various projects that are, which you'll see here on the board. We are coordinating, but we frankly believe that this requires more than coordination. It's going to require some true collaboration and integration of these projects that we are running for you and for the regional agencies. The problem is too big for us, and our resources are too limited. We have to combine forces if we're going to make headway on these issues. We're running somewhat in parallel now with some collaboration, and we're talking about a lot more intersection of those lines rather than parallel efforts. We think it'll be a lot clearer to our partners in the local government, in the private sector, NGOs, if we are more integrated as a regional approach to these projects as opposed to all separate projects. I can tell you in the last week of doing stakeholder interviews with a number of people in the region, in two of the interviews, One with a water district, they said, well, Bruce, how is this connected to One Bay Area? And how is it connected to the SCS? That was their first question after I outlined what we were doing with our regional collaborative project. And yesterday I had from a city, after I went through the same questions about our collaborative, and they said, how does this work with ABAG is doing this whole thing on hazard mitigation. How is it connected or not to that? So people are getting it, that we have a number of projects, and we're getting it with a healthy push from Mr. Goldspan here. We're getting it that we need to do a much bigger and better job of integrating our work. And we also think it'll lead to more creative solutions. It will also lead us to a better working relationship with the state, as opposed to all of us with our separate projects working with the state agencies. We can speak more with one voice. So we're going to talk a little bit about the first three bullets that are on here, because what we're looking at is adapting to rising tides and the sea level rise strategy that you approved late last year. The project that I've been updating you on and that we're moving along with on the Climate and Energy Resilience Project, and then ABAG's Regional Resilience Initiative. And we'll add to that Flood Control 2.0, which is some very creative and interesting, innovative work with about $3 million in grants that's going on in three different flood mouths of creeks in the Bay Area, with really innovative approach to looking at both environmental benefits and cost benefits and infrastructure benefits. So they're calling it Flood Control 2.0, and how all that relates to the economic development strategy we've talked about here and to the SCS. So we're Joe is going to walk you through some slides that show some initial points of collaboration.
Thank you, Bruce. And as the regional agencies are working to develop a detailed work plan for the regional resilience strategy that you adopted a very broad work plan for back in September, we felt it was important to look at the work that we already have underway to see where there is opportunities for collaboration, and also to identify those synergistic work that's already underway. We learned that there really is a tremendous amount of synergistic work that's already taking place, and that we're collaborating on a number of projects that can really contribute to the formulation of this regional resilience strategy. So first, we looked at equity and social equity, and we found that there are several independent projects that could be integrated in to create a more coherent approach in the region for reflecting these equity considerations both in our adaptation and our mitigation efforts. So the Bay Area Climate, Energy, and Resilience Project that Bruce is leading is coordinating with Bay Localize, an umbrella equity organization that is in partnership with the San Francisco Foundation, convening 25 equity organizations to get their input on key social equity issues and how we can integrate those into our adaptation planning. Similarly, ABAG's Resilience Initiative is evaluating equity in projects in partnership with the USGS. They are examining housing vulnerability, focusing on those neighborhoods that have high social vulnerability, and then trying to develop policy guidance for assisting local governments for integrating this this consideration into their efforts to respond to both disaster preparedness and response for the inevitable disasters that will befall us. And BCDC in the ART project is addressing social equity in by first looking at how equity is kind of bubbles to the surface in evaluating the 12 asset categories that we have are evaluating in the ART project sub-region. And those equity issues are summarized in the first the existing conditions and stressors report, as well as in the vulnerability and risk report that identified the vulnerability and risk across these 12 asset categories, ranging from transportation to contaminated lands and landfills and neighborhoods and community land use and a broad cross-section of issues. The equity considerations were summarized in a white paper that we prepared, and it's available on our website for the ART project. And we part of building that equity white paper was based on surveys that we did of equity organizations, as well as the stakeholder or the working group members from the cities in our subregion. And we also integrated the metrics from the Sustainable Community Strategy, Plan Bay Area, so that we could create a coherent and integrated approach to assessing equity in the region, both from an adaptation standpoint as well as a mitigation standpoint. And then, so we think that as well, you know, the Bay Area Air Quality Management District's Care Communities program integrates well with this and supports the implementation of the Sustainable Community Strategy across the JPC member agencies. So thank you, Bruce. Can you just go to the next slide? Thanks. So the next issue that we looked at was governance. And JPC agencies are also collaborating on governance and issues in our adaptation planning. We defined governance broader than simply looking at government and you know, actions of cities and counties and in state and regional agencies. We look at civil society as well, looking at property owners and landowners and NGOs and stakeholders, business owners, and how they can participate in the priority setting and decision making for adaptation planning. We think that that's an appropriate frame for addressing the issue of governance. And in the ART project, BCDC has completed a white paper on a draft white paper on governance that looks at both the barriers and the opportunities that our current institutional arrangements provide us in terms of being able to meet the challenges that we are identifying through our vulnerability assessments and how we can formulate adaptation strategies. Similarly, in the Climate and Energy Project, Steve Weissman from the UC Berkeley Bolt School of Law is working with Bruce to prepare a white paper on equity issues and
governance.
Thank you, Bruce.
That's why
we're
here.
Yeah, we're collaborating. And a white paper on governance that is going to look at decision-making, collaboration issues, and how we can learn from other regions like New York City, Southeast Florida, and Chicago, and bring those lessons learned into our region and see whether any of those are applicable here. Similarly, ABAG's Hazards Program is developing guidance on governance and through in the Regional Resilience Initiative, and they've got developing a policy paper on governance and how it can help or hinder disaster preparedness and response, and focusing on assisting local governments and vulnerabilities in particular neighborhoods. Now, we will integrate these projects more as we develop the work plan for the resilience strategy going forward. Next slide, please. So another area that we looked at was nature-based adaptation, and we have several collaborative projects underway. Bruce mentioned a couple of them that will help us to better take advantage of the ecosystem services that our wetlands, creeks, and rivers provide us as we develop adaptation strategies. So BCDC, the USGS, the University of San Francisco, and a consulting firm, ESAPWA, is conducting a study in Corte Madera Bay in Marin County to both assess the wetland benefits of wave attenuation benefits of wetlands and how wetlands and mudflats can dampen wave heights. And as well, we are developing a set of conceptual adaptation strategies that can be employed at either the near shore, you know, offshore of the wetlands, or in the wetlands themselves to make them more resilient to sea level rise and help them continue to provide the ecosystem services that they provide us now. Now, this work is feeding directly into the Baylands Goals update that the State Coastal Conservancy is leading. Back in 1999, you may recall that the region scientists came together and crafted a report on Baylands Goals and how we can adapt our or how much wetlands we need to sustain the species that we have here in the bay. Well, that report didn't reflect sea level rise and climate change. So that report needs to be updated, and the Conservancy is leading that. And a lot of the management ideas that have been generated in the Corte de Madera study are being integrated into that work. And the San Francisco Estuary Project and ABAG are really key players in that effort. And as well, the San Francisco Estuary Project is leading the project Bruce mentioned, Flood Control 2.0, which is a partnership with the Bay Area Flood Protection Agency Associations. BCDC is a key player in that. We're looking at ways to redesign creek channels so that they can better mobilize sediment and move that sediment down to the bay. Currently, we're paying to dredge that sediment out of creeks for flood protection purposes and haul it off to landfills and use it as cover. So we're trying to find a way to make that a more economical resource for us and get it where we need it, down at the bay's edge to build up wetlands. And similarly, San Francisco Estuary Project is partnering with the Oraloma Sanitary District in formulating a project to develop wetlands near the Oraloma Sanitary District's wastewater treatment plant, where fresh water that comes out of the plant can be integrated with sediment that's available at the shoreline to create brackish wetlands, which accrete faster, as well as ecotones, transitional habitat between the bay and upland areas, and that that can accrete faster than our tidal wetlands can, perhaps could be a key element in our regional resilience strategy. Next slide, please. And as was discussed earlier, we're also working on business engagement with the business community and how we can integrate their considerations into the work that we're doing. As was mentioned, the Bay Area Council's Economic Institute, you know, prepared a report on the Bay Area economy that exemplified the JPC's interest in integrating these considerations into its work. With the Adapting to Rising Tides project, we've engaged businesses within the subregion that we're working in to understand how they might be vulnerable to sea level rise, so that they can really help us understand what those vulnerabilities might be, and we'll as well get feedback from them on adaptation strategies. And and we have reached out to representatives from that community to get more direct involvement from the business organizations themselves in the work of the ARC project. Bruce, as part of the Climate and Energy Project, is getting input from key business organizations in the nine counties, the Bay Area Business Coalition, the Bay Area Council, the North Bay Council, the East Bay Economic Development Alliance, Silicon Valley Leadership Group, and others. And Bay Area Air Quality Management District has done pretty extensive outreach to the business community as part of its healthy infill effort, and that will help us to implement our sustainable community strategy. And as you heard at your last meeting, the ABAG and MTC have obtained a HUD grant to implement the Bay Area Prosperity Plan to ensure that those people in maybe less economically advantaged communities can benefit from the implementation of our SCS. And so we see all of this kind of fitting together to improve our engagement with economic interests in developing adaptation planning and developing a coherent strategy among the regional agencies. With that, I guess we'd like to pause and give an opportunity for questions before we move on to the updates of the specific projects.
Thanks, Joe. Just, you know, those are four examples of collaboration points we've identified already: equity and governance and engagement with the business community and the nature-based solutions. There will be others, but those are the four most obvious ones that when staff has met now three times to look at the different projects and go, these are the things we have to be doing together. These are the things we have to start on together. It will eventually lead to more, we think, long-range planning, where we're not looking at existing projects and trying to integrate them. We're looking ahead and developing integrated projects. So, Larry, you pushed in a very good way on making this happen. Do you want to add to what we've said?
Yeah, thanks, Bruce. From and probably because I'm relatively new here, and therefore I'm trying to wrap my head around all this stuff that's going on, what I asked Bruce and Joe and the gang to do is let us know where there actually are places where the different regional agencies are bumping and grinding against each other. And that is both in a good way and, candidly, in a way that may be counterproductive. So the first stab at this, which they have done, is to at least identify, because we all know the four cornerstones of what we're looking at, what the projects are. Because my gut tells me that if a constituent came up to you and said, so what are you actually working on in governance in the Bay Area because of sea level rise, you probably couldn't name one or two different projects. So what we will get to you are what those names are and exactly who's working on it and so on. So if you would go back to just any one of the, go back to any one of the four and show the Venn diagrams. Perfect. What this is a two-dimensional framework visually that you can see that there are intersections on. And there are intersections between and among all four of the different projects that people are working on. The next iteration of this that you'll see is coming from this, recognizing the areas of intersection, recognizing where we're bumping up against each other, recognizing where ABAG is talking to the same group that, believe it or not, we're talking to, but in different ways. We then need to give you a list of products that are going to come out of these projects, where those products are geographically, to make sure that Brad Wagon Connect and Eric Marr know that what's going on in Napa and what's going on in San Francisco actually may have some relevance to each other, and who the external stakeholders are, who Bruce is talking to, who Brenda's talking to, who Danielle's talking to, so that you understand what that is. That, to me, is a real work plan. And that then turns that two-dimensional Venn diagram that we all learned about in high school algebra into something which is far more three-dimensional and actually has some body to it. So that's the next iteration of that. That'll be the next iteration that you essentially see. But we want to use those four pillars of equity, governance, nature, and economy as the way we then move forward in that. Does that make sense to folks? Cool.
So that's a good segue into any comments or questions that folks have before we go into the updates, trying to break this out. Jake, and followed by Mary.
Just wondering, and you're looking at governance models, if you've examined the Sonoma County Regional Climate Protection Authority model. We just had legislation signed last year that extends the life of that authority until 2020.
It is certainly one of the models we're looking at, and it's the only official climate authority here in the nine-county region, so it's one that's very relevant to us. Mm-hmm. And I'm interviewing Suzanne next week about it. So.
And it's we cited it in the white paper that BCDC drafted for governance in the region.
If everybody doesn't know, and they probably don't, Sonoma took their regional transportation or their countywide transportation authority, and Jake, as I understand it, with the same board, now constituted it as the Sonoma Climate Authority.
That is correct. We hold our meetings coincidentally or concurrently or together, however you want to put it, with that same structure and with a specific contract manager who reports to Suzanne Smith, the executive director of both authorities.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. It may be an innocuous question, but in Joe's presentation, he mentioned a community named Mira Loma, and I'm not quite sure geographically where that exists.
It's actually Oro Loma.
Oro Loma, thank you.
It's a sanitary district on the East Bay shoreline. It's in the Hayward area, Hayward-San Leandro area.
Yeah.
So they provide wastewater services in that area of the bay.
And they're an independent special district?
Yeah. Yes, they are.
Thank you.
One of those scores of dozens of special sanitary districts in the Bay Area, right? Yes.
And Joe, just on local, flood control 2.0 is three creeks, so Walnut?
Walnut, San Francisco, and Novato. And so each of those has, well, two of them anyway, San Francisco and Novato, have an independent project that's kind of moving ahead, and the Flood Control 2.0 is collaborating with them to integrate this consideration of how we move sediment down to the shoreline and gain the benefits of it where we need it.
Other comments or questions? Okay, so we'll move on to some updates.
Okay, well, I will start with the Adapting to Rising Tides project. As I mentioned, we've completed the vulnerability and risk assessment, and we've moved on to the formulation of adaptation strategies. And last Wednesday, we had a meeting with our working group here in Oakland at the BART offices, and we are exploring a process of developing adaptation strategies that works at different scales. So we're starting at the asset level. We have tried to formulate strategies at the sector level, say across transportation or across wastewater treatment, and we've also tried to formulate strategies at the sub-region-wide level, and our stakeholders told us that those weren't particularly helpful or meaningful, and so at least they were having difficulty grasping them, and so we decided to go down to the asset level and then sort of bounce back out to a broader level based on looking at the vulnerabilities of a specific asset. And that what we did, and we went through an exercise of assessing the vulnerability of a an elder care facility located near the shorelines vulnerable to flooding, and then looked at the connections of that facility to other infrastructure in the community as a means of kind of bouncing back out to the broader considerations. So we will continue to refine our approach to developing adaptation strategies going forward, and I'm going to turn it over to Brenda now, who's going to talk a little bit about some work that BCDC and MTC and ABAG are doing together on adaptation.
Thanks, Joe. So some of you might be aware that in 2010, MTC with BCDC and Caltrans received an FHWA grant to look at transportation vulnerability within this Adapting to Rising Tides subregion. And that grant fortunately allowed us to really improve and develop our sea level rise mapping for the project, which benefited the entire Adapting to Rising Tides process. We were also really able to dig into our transportation assets and see how vulnerable and at risk they are to sea level rise. And that was wrapped up in November of 2011. But now, fortunately, FHWA has come up with another grant opportunity, which we're currently in the process of applying for, once again with BCDC and Caltrans, and also with BART this round. And that is to focus on adaptation. Now that we've completed the risk and vulnerability, we can really move into developing solutions. And to fit in with everything that's been happening in the Adapting to Rising Tides project, we'll be able to take the lessons learned as they're going through their adaptation process as well. And so with this money, we plan on focusing in three specific areas within the Adapting to Rising Tides focus area. It'll be the Baybridge Peninsula in West Oakland, the State Route 92 corridor, as well as the Coliseum area. So we're really looking at some of these multimodal areas and different types of transportation assets and trying to develop adaptation strategies for them. And these aren't just built solutions. They'll also include some of the governance topics that we've been discussing, as well as what sort of legislation do we need, authority, funding, things like that to go along with it. So that's very exciting. We're very hopeful that it will be successful, and that grant is due on Tuesday. Very soon. And then I wanted to talk about one other project that we've been working on. ABAG and MTC, as you know, are conducting the EIR for the Plan Bay area right now. And as part of that analysis, we are looking at a mid-century sea level rise scenario and identifying areas for both job and housing growth that are going to be susceptible to sea level rise in the future, as well as our planned transportation assets and how susceptible they are. And so that will be looking at 12 inches of sea level rise on top of our highest high tides or our king tides. So that analysis should be very illuminating, and all of these projects should help us with the JPC's sea level rise work plan. So now Danielle is going to talk about ABAG's resilience project.
Thank you, Brenda. For those of you who are not familiar, over the past 18 months, ABAG has launched a regional disaster resilience initiative. The goal of this has been to understand how we as a region can plan to more quickly and efficiently recover from an earthquake. We feel in the Bay Area that there has been significant investment in planning around emergency response, and we want to know more about what we do when the response phase is over. How do we collect our resources and our leadership capacity to rebuild our region and get ourselves going again? So through this process, we have worked with a wide variety of stakeholders, businesses, nonprofits, local governments, infrastructure providers, and so forth, to learn about what our capacities are and what our needs are around the topics of housing, economy, infrastructure, and governance. And through this, our focus has been on areas of the need for interjurisdictional coordination, cooperation, and regional efforts. So the outcome of this process has been four policy papers on each of the four areas, which are in their final draft stage, and we expect to release soon. And then in the next steps, we hope to begin to work with our RPC, our Regional Planning Committee, to implement priority actions in collaboration with the SES, the Sea Level Rise Adaptation Strategy, and other regional initiatives. One of the priority areas that was identified by RPC as an outcome of this has been the governance issue. And we see a great deal of synergy between this work on earthquake resilience and governance and our work on climate resilience and governance issues. These are the two most significant hazards our region faces and the two that could really benefit from some coordination about how we develop these governance issues. So with that, I think Bruce is going to wrap up the...
Bruce on this one. You know, my project that I'm running for the JPC, the Bay Area Climate and Energy Resilience Project, is to create, with your funding and with funding from Kresge Foundation, a regional umbrella collaborative around adaptation planning for the nine-county region, a collaborative that would provide products and services to BCDC and ABAG's projects and MTC's projects around adaptation and to cities and counties and special districts. So whatever groups are running adaptation projects in the region, our collaborative would be there to both provide services and products to them and to pull them together where we need to pull together and work together as a region on one issue or another around climate adaptation. So we're in the middle right now of doing stakeholder interviews, and these are the the groups that we've interviewed and some that are scheduled in the next 2 weeks, and we have a few more that still need to be scheduled. But a wide range of people, they're very happy to be asked because we ask them, how can we help you? How can we help your county, help your city, help your transportation authority, help your water district, help you, the utility for our electricity utility for our region, help you, a foundation. There are a whole series of players here. So we're asking them, one, what are they doing? And so we can get more up to date on what they're doing, if anything, with adaptation. Public health departments, a whole set here. But then more importantly, how can we help you? How can this collaborative be designed to really help you move ahead and help us move ahead together? So we are winding up all of the input by the end of this month, and then we're going to take February to make sense of all of it. But I'll give you a preview right now of some things that are coming out as themes. These will change as we get more input over the next couple of weeks. So for the collaborative, we're hearing a big cry for people, someone to convene, like the Art Project has done, but take it around the bay and take it away from the bay to other areas. Convene peer groups, so we're convening already some as our input, transportation providers. We had a great meeting that Brenda was a part of the other day with the rail providers in the region, so they can hear from each other, BART and Capital Corridor and Caltrain and SFMTA and VTA. They can hear what each of the agencies is doing right now on climate adaptation and looking at impacts. Same thing with public health departments. We've pulled them together. We had a meeting of all of the public health departments, the county public health departments in the region. And it was fascinating to see all of them exchanging information as to what each agency is doing or not doing in terms of climate adaptation. So one has been convene these types of peer groups on an ongoing basis so they can continue to learn from each other. But the second, which maybe is even more interesting, is mixed groups. Capitol Corridor the other day, Jim Allison said, you know, what I need is not only to talk to the other transportation folks, I need to know the other infrastructure owners who are along my right-of-way or along my tracks, because I want to know, and this is similar to what the Art Project has done, I want to know what PG&E is thinking if they have a substation right there. I want to know what the Water District is thinking about sea level rise. I want to know what the cities along my tracks are thinking, so that we don't, one, come up with solutions that are against each other, and two, we come up with cheaper solutions, because we can cut the cost quite a bit by going in on things together. So we've had a cry from a number of different stakeholder interviews, put us together in small geographic units, and we're trying to figure out what those are, but pretty small units so that there can be this kind of creative problem solving. And again, the Art Project has already surfaced this as a great way to work. Secondly, there needs to be a there around climate adaptation in the region. We have a lot of different projects, but we're hearing a need for some sort of an information center, kind of an active information center that would be more like the Ag Extension model, where you're out in the field talking to people running projects and bringing that information back and sharing it with others. But somewhere where we can go, and not just a website, where people can call and find out who is working on a certain project, who is making progress on this one, is somebody else already thinking about this one? And the third piece would be the story and the campaign. Every single group we've talked to, almost without exception, has said, you need to be talking to my board, or you need to be talking to my boss, or you need to be talking to my funder. I need someone to go in and talk with them about what we're facing in terms of impacts and bring a science-based, true-to-life story about the Bay Area and California to those groups so that they will get more support within that organization in terms of doing adaptation planning. So those are kind of the three key pieces, the three legs of the collaborative. We're also hearing about a number of focus areas or topics that we could take on, and here are just a few examples. These would be in addition to this kind of umbrella approach. Certainly aligning government efforts, and we're talking about that here today. We're hearing that a lot from our stakeholders. In polite terms, will you guys get your act together and not come at us from all these different directions, but bring us a more unified and integrated approach? And that's part of what you're seeing here today. A second one has been, and this has come up, and I'm sure in a number of your local city and county work, our regulatory process, the regulations were all put in over the years for good reason and smart thinking, but together they're keeping us from doing a number of things that we need to do here in the 21st century. So we've heard from a number of stakeholders saying, again, from the government side, would you guys sit down together and figure out how we're going to have a more integrated, more 21st century approach to regulations? We would do things that are in your interest in terms of climate change, but right now it's more expensive or it's three times as long because of all the different hoops that we have to jump through. So that's not a new theme. I'm sure you've heard that a number of times. We're hearing it now, and we're hearing people talk about ways that maybe you could do this. Finances is certainly a huge one for everyone we're talking with. Creative financing approaches are going to be needed here. And a couple of call-outs on sectors. Every sector we've talked with, water and energy and transportation, public health and all, there's a gap between interest and resources, as usual, and quite a bit lately. The gap on public health is this wide. We are not resourced in the Bay Area, nor in California. This is a big item in Southern California for their plan as well. We are not resourced, nor are we structured regionally to work with public health. So we're having a number of discussions with BARHI and with others who are working together regionally to try to see what kind of a structure and what resources would be needed to bring public health folks even to the starting line to catch up to where we are on water and on energy and on transportation and some other places. Again, the gap is there for every sector. Public health is a bigger gap and needs, we think, special attention. And finally, this notion of community resilience that we mentioned in the adaptation article that we're going to pass out, this idea that while you're doing infrastructure and while infrastructure is critical and will have an impact on everyone's life, There are a lot of approaches now around building community resilience and neighborhood resilience and networks and all that are going to help us tremendously post-disaster and as impacts hit us. So that's where we are, and we're going to have a more complete version of this for you in the March meeting. We'll take February to put recommendations together, and we'll be back with recommendations to you and to the Kresge Foundation in March as to what a collaborative should look like. So we could take questions. Okay.
Yeah. Questions and comments on this. Scott?
Yeah, just if you go back one slide.
Here?
No, one more. This group here. You know, when I look at that group, and maybe...
Speak of the mic a little more so we can hear you more.
Remember, I'm soft-spoken.
Okay. We want to hear what you have to say.
We're remembering that.
Yeah.
That's in the minutes.
You know, when you look at that, and maybe you just can't, and I see the bottom line, but, you know, one of the things that kind of jumps out at me, unless I'm just not seeing it, is the public works departments. I mean, where are they falling in on this? Because to me, it seems like you should have a group of public works directors that are meeting and talking about this as a collaborative and then reporting out. So,
good call. We are seeing them individually as we do cities and counties. We have not pulled them together, but that's certainly something that would be good to do. That and city managers both kind of in terms of association.
Yeah, and I realize, I mean, look at that list right there. How do you manage that? So, I mean, I get that it's very hard to get all these, but maybe if you bring them all in together, that would be an easier way to get them. And also get them collaborating, too, because, you know, they need to talk to each other.
Good.
And then there was a few more slides back, and I wish they were numbered or I wish we had them, but it was in relationship, I think, to the art project. And I noticed that you had the city of Union City there, but I don't see the city of Fremont, and I'm kind of curious as to why they're not there.
Well, when we formulated the art sub-region, we tried to focus on, having never done this before, we tried to focus on a doable scope of work. And we initially started out with the sort of Bay Bridge Peninsula down to the city of Hayward, but we felt that it was important to include the South Bay Salt Pond Restoration Project piece that's taking place at Eden Landing. And it was, I would say, primarily a concern about whether we had the capacity to deal with the entire county as opposed to any desire to exclude. We did reach out to the city of Fremont. They were a little tepid about being engaged, and so we felt that this was a broad... our objectives were to ensure that we had a wide range of land uses, a broad... range of shoreline configurations, mm-hmm. as well as willing partners, and
I would only suggest that you try the city of Fremont again. First of all, it's the second largest city in Alameda County, and they do have a tremendous amount of shoreline. But the new mayor is a little bit more regionally thinking, and he would probably be very interested in something like this, and maybe you want to be one of the champions. So I would say reach out to them again and see what you can get. Unless it is really a resource problem on your end, then maybe he can just watch from the sidelines.
Great, thank you.
Good. Any other comments or any questions? Jim?
Just a request. You know, Bruce, in your comment, you keep talking about what they are doing. I don't know who they are and what they're doing. I don't know what they're doing. Is it possible repeatedly, a lot of your presentations. In a future meeting, could you come back and give us examples of what people are doing?
Sure.
I think it would be good for us to just see what's happening on the ground, because I'm having a hard time relating to they and what they're doing. So for a future meeting, I think it would be a good briefing for us.
Good. I mean, the quick answer is mostly what's going on right now are planning studies. You know, BART is looking at their infrastructure and where they're vulnerable in terms of sea level rise. They're looking at heat issues in warmer parts of their, and how that would affect their infrastructure, also how it would affect their electricity supply and demand on hot days, which they're so dependent upon. Capital Corridor is very vulnerable based on where their tracks are, to sea level rise and storm storm damage and all, and they're assessing that and assessing what their options would be, and starting to look ahead. But mostly what people are looking at is trying to understand the risks right now. Wastewater treatment plants, you know, a whole set. But we can bring in some there are a whole set of examples.
But before we move on to the issue of how this relates to the state climate change planning, can you put in perspective, Bruce, the work that's sort of follow up on what Jim's saying, the perspective of the work that's ongoing and sort of the timeline as to the development of the Bay Area Regional Adaptation Strategy. Of, you know, we started this when BCDC approved its Bay Plan Amendment. It then recommended that the Bay Area develop through the JPC a regional adaptation strategy, which we've accepted that responsibility. We're setting out to do that. This is the initial stage. Why don't you talk about what this leads to down the road and the timeline to the extent that you can estimate that in terms of the final development of a regional adaptation strategy here in the Bay Area?
We have a timeline on the regional sea level rise adaptation strategy, and Joe can talk about that. We have no timeline or plan yet laid out for the other impacts.
Well, just to remind that when the Joint Policy Committee adopted the work plan back in the fall, it included a set of three tasks. The first task was to kind of complete the work that we had ongoing and begin to plan for what was task two, which is working over a four-year period leading up to the next sustainable community strategy, and finding ways to integrate the considerations of adaptation into the sustainable community strategy. So we, the agencies, ABAG, MTC, and the Air District, have been meeting to discuss what this work plan looks like. We'd hoped to be a little further along for this meeting than we were today, but we expect that at your next meeting we'll be quite a bit further along in terms of describing what task two looks like. So in the a lot of what you saw today was task one. It's the existing projects and our assessment of how they contribute to the furtherance of a regional resilience strategy. We and Brenda outlined our application for grant. Some of the delay in getting a work plan together has been effort spent chasing money, trying to find resources to do the work, and that distracted us from, advancing the work plan. But I expect that next time we'll have a much more thorough description of what task two, which was scheduled to start this spring in March, what that looks like.
Okay. Any other questions?
Could I just add to that?
Sure. And then Mark, did you have a question on that, Mark?
Yeah, and maybe it's asking this maybe a similar question but differently. And I think as you go through this, everyone may have an expectation of what the outcome of all this is going to be. It might be good to make that explicit. What are the questions we're going to answer? And I mean specifically, where is our next dollar of infrastructure going to be invested and why? And how does the Baquamid work with the water district on sediment loading? I mean, and just some of the questions that we expect. Ultimately, what's the product of all this? How's it going to get implemented? What after we have these great studies, what happens? And I think if we made that explicit, it would be part of our story in terms of what we're trying to tell.
I'll be blunt with you that we have not set out here to create a regional adaptation plan around all of the impacts at this point. That would be simpler, actually, to come and tell you that that's what we're doing and we can lay out a schedule for that. The model we're following now, for better or for worse, is to build a collaboration and to understand the many projects that are going on. And getting to Jim's question, you know, water districts are doing a number of things here, but it varies from water district to water district. Now, Contra Costa Water District is very concerned about the Delta and all of that water coming out and saltwater intrusion. All SFPUC is doing a number of studies because there it's all High Sierra water for San Francisco, or about three-quarters of their water is. So each of the and East Bay Mud is doing a similar thing in their studies in the Sierra. Marin is really looking at local water, because that is 3/4 of Marin's water is locally generated there, right in their county. So what we have right now are a whole series of projects run by a number of different stakeholders, mostly around planning, all on different timelines. And we're not going out to them at this point and saying, you all have to become part of one big thing, or you have to get on the same timeline. We're trying to understand what they're doing and to build from that strength. That's, again, for better or for worse, that's the way this has all started, and that's the way it's going for now. We have a lot of thoughts ourselves, staff do, about where that needs to go eventually, but for now, that's our approach.
And if I could add to that, just on the sea level rise front, the intention was to expand, or to, as Scott was requesting, to apply the art project methodology in other parts of the region. As I mentioned, we were applying for grant funding to try and expand that work into both Marin and Santa Clara counties. We weren't successful in getting that funding, but we're still looking for other sources of funding to at least start in one of those other counties so that we can better understand the different challenges that different geographies in the region face, the land use mix, the landform, and the economic resources are all different throughout the region, and they each, they're sort of like little microclimates that we have to factor into when we think about developing a regional strategy. So that's the model at this point, but as we dive further into it, we may come back to you with some suggestions for modifying that too. Tom?
Excuse me. I think what the work we're doing is important and necessary, and I don't want to diminish the what we're doing. But I do think, along the lines that Mark raised, I think at some point we've got to start thinking about the end game. And the end game is, how are we going to finance this? How's this going to actually take place? I mean, it's one thing to understand the risk. It's another thing to actually do something about it. And, you know, with sea level rise, it's so small and so incremental, you know, a very small percentage. But when you look at what's actually happening today, we're getting incredible climate disruption, and this disruption is causing all kinds of problems. That the problem's not 50 years away; it's today. I mean, what's happening with this water? You know, with this huge torrential downpour we had here, caused all kinds of flood problems. That we need to figure out some way where we can start actually moving towards some kind of implementation of strategies. And you look at it, obviously local governments and other governments can agencies can start planning and start doing things to understanding the forecast and making changes in terms of land use and other kinds of things and adapting and strategies around that. But we have a huge public investment in things like airports and interstates and trains. How are we going to deal with this massive problem of how we're going to finance it after we fully understand the risks? So I think we need to get something going along that line.
Well, I think this actually,
on the one hand, the federal government, what we are now doing is simply after the fact. You know, like what happened with Sandy. You know, the $50 billion is just approved by the House. The huge heat wave we had in the Midwest, they're going to appropriate $13 or $14 billion for that. I mean, that's all. So what we're doing now is just making up for after the fact. So the question is, how do we get ahead of it, and what are some ideas?
And it seems that that issue relates, Tom, to the larger issue of looking at a regional economic development strategy, in a sense that the financing for this is going to be related to an economic development strategy as well. We may want to raise that issue when we have the business community here at our meeting in April.
Okay. I guarantee you this will look very different in a year. This is we are trying to lay a foundation here and a network of the agencies who are taking action and moving ahead with planning. We will have something different, and it will look quite different, I believe, in 12 months. We're just laying the groundwork, and I think the background work for that.
Yeah, and Mayor Bates, if I could add to that, the Bay Area is leading on adaptation planning in the country. When we try to look to examples for how to go about doing this, there aren't any. And the grant that we're applying for, the first round, they gave us lots of guidance on what the approach should be from the Federal Highway Administration. And on the adaptation grant cycle that we're currently looking at, they gave us absolutely no guidance because they don't have any. So we're out in front.
I guess I'm not faulting that. I think what we're doing is correct. I just think we also got to start thinking about the other part of it. Like, okay, we got all this information, we got all these risks, we got all these problems. Now what are we going to do about it?
Great. Okay, so we're going to move on to our Jim.
John,
we'll move on.
You.
Yes.
When you talk about governance, is there any discussion about one agency having jurisdiction over the geographic area 1 foot of sea level rise would cover, very similar to what BCDC has with their 100 foot or whatever the distance is from the shoreline? Some places it seems like it's 5 miles, but
we're not looking at those kind of specific authorities at this point yet. Mainly what we're trying to do is to assess what the existing institutional arrangements are and how well they help us or don't help us to implement strategies. And because we don't have strategies yet, it's difficult for us to really assess that. And I think, as Bruce pointed out in his presentation, that I think some of the partnerships across jurisdictions and financing are going to be much bigger challenges than our who gets to tell who what to do. But I think that we're far from being able to know what the proper authorities are. Yeah. And I think we're more approaching it from a partnership and financing standpoint at this time.
Well, at some point, I think you're going to need to consider. I think it's very short-sighted if you really believe that several hundred agencies and municipalities are all going to come to the same conclusion. That isn't going to happen. And so there needs to be some agency that actually clears and has some jurisdiction, very similar to what BCDC has. At some point, that has to be part of this discussion.
Okay. Still a ways off for that discussion, right? Mark?
Why don't I just wait to hear from Mike.
Great.
Then
okay.
He may answer my questions.
Great. All right, so we're going to move on to 4B, which is coordination between Bay Area and state climate adaptation initiatives. Before I turn it over to Bruce further, I just want to acknowledge that we're pleased to have Michael McCormick from the Governor's Office of Planning and Research. And Mike lives here in the East Bay, lives in El Cerrito, so still in El Cerrito, right? So he knows this area as well, and commutes up to Sacramento.
Thanks, John. So Mike and I are going to try in 10 minutes here to tell you a little bit about ARCA, which is the alliance. You can see the outline of it on the screen, and then Michael's going to talk some about what the state is doing on climate adaptation. So ARCA, which I've mentioned at previous meetings, is an alliance we formed with San Diego, Los Angeles, the Bay Area, and the Sacramento regions with the Governor's Office of Planning and Research. We have four representatives from each of the four regions on ARCA right now, and our goal is nothing less than aligning the state resources on adaptation, the regional resources, and the local resources so that we get a coordinated and powerful program. What that looks like, subject to much more discussion. And in the first quarter, ARCA's work that we're conducting right now, we've put in a NOAA grant proposal that would help in terms of coordination on coastal issues amongst the four regions. We're talking with the state about developing a more coordinated research program that would be more tied to what practitioners and agencies who are doing the work need in terms of research and information. We're looking at a communication strategy again with the state, a story on adaptation. And Michael is really helping us in the governor's office in terms of linking to resources agencies, and CalEMA are probably the two most important agencies here. And then certainly we're going to fundraise for a part-time coordinator. So this alliance where we can work together more effectively than working separately as four regions can work nicely. So I'll turn it over to Michael and talk a little bit about the state's efforts.
Thank you, Bruce. And I just want to acknowledge Bruce's leadership in pulling together the Alliance of Regional Collaboratives. Probably would not have happened without him. Los Angeles and the Bay Area got together to create this, pulling in San Diego and later on Sacramento. And it's really created quite a benefit for the state of California as we've been thinking about how to move forward on our own adaptation efforts. Because I think there's an acknowledgement that without local and regional partnerships, we're really not going to meet our goals at the state. And ARCA is starting to really create a conversation with our regional partners that we didn't have previously. They've already contributed comments on the California Adaptation Strategy, which I'll talk about in a second. But they've also helped us coordinate on the research, as Bruce has already said, saving the state money, because we realized there were some redundancies in the research that were going that was happening in some regions of the state. And now we have the statewide downscaling work that's going on right now so that we can get a better idea of what the impacts are at the local and regional level so that we can actually use data to do policy making at the local level. And ARCA is going to serve a very important role in that so that we can get a better idea of what the regions need and the local stakeholders within those regions as we roll out that data. So thank you again, Bruce. It's a great to be here today to talk a little bit more about what the state's working on. Obviously, I'm not going to be able to talk about everything. I have a limited amount of time. So if you have any questions or something that I've glossed over, feel free to raise your hand or just speak up and butt in. That's how we like to do things. And I'm not soft-spoken, so I might have to lean back from the microphone a little bit. So the general plan guidelines is probably the first one I want to bring up. I think that'll pique everybody's interest in adaptation. One of the things we're trying to figure out is how to structure the discussion around climate change in the general plan guidelines. The last comprehensive update was in 2003. There's not a single mention of climate change in the guidelines right now. Obviously, AB 32 passed in 06. So we are looking at a comprehensive update that folds climate change in each of the elements and then also talks about the need to deal with the adaptation question and the changes in baseline scenarios we might be looking at in the future. So we're going through a process right now to identify what that structure might look like. Obviously, it's a little challenging integrating this discussion into all of the elements, but there's clearly a need for it as people are struggling with this at the local and regional level as well. To inform that process, we're developing a Climate Action Plan Technical Advisory. It's allowed us to meet with stakeholders throughout the state and develop an approach to developing a climate action plan at the local level that we think meets the minimum standards for the CEQA guidelines, which is a whole other conversation. I'm not going to go into that, but if you have questions about it, we can talk about that as well. But the Climate Action Plan Technical Advisory is going to recommend inclusion of adaptation as a part of the discussion in any climate action plan moving forward, if it's meant to meet the CEQA, the minimum standards of the CEQA guidelines. And we're looking at completing a public draft of that in the next couple of months. And we've been working with the Air Resources Board, with the local ICLEI, Local Governments for Sustainability, and a number of other partners on tools and resources, particularly through the State Energy Efficiency Collaborative to support baseline analysis tools, mitigation monitoring tools, climate action plan templates, and making sure they meet the standards that we're going to expect and roll out in the Climate Action Plan Technical Advisory. So that's one piece of what we're working on, and that will certainly update the general plan guidelines process, which will be going on throughout 2013. We will be holding workshops on the general plan guidelines later on this year. So if you're interested in attending those workshops or having staff attend those workshops, please do have them sign up on the OPR website email list serve. We also have a climate change email list of interest, and we send emails out every couple of weeks of items of interest for that as well. There's a number of things that are informing the general plan guidelines, but also informing general policy at the state level that I think I should mention here today. And many of you may be familiar with some of these efforts already, so I apologize if this is redundant or Bruce has already provided briefings on this. But the California Adaptation Strategy that we're working on right now is the last comprehensive strategy was developed in 2009. That was the first. A number of those items that were identified to move forward with have already been accomplished. There's a required update every 3 years, so we're in the process of updating the adaptation strategy and creating more definitive action items around each of the individual's impact sectors. One of the things we're talking about is how best to integrate local and regional discussions, because right now there isn't that much detail about that in the 09 strategy. As an extension of that, we have the adaptation planning guide that was released last year to help support development of an adaptation strategy at the local level. We feel this is also applicable at the regional level. The intent is to update that on a pretty regular basis. Both of those items, you can get the process progress on them. The APG's documentation, you can get that at climatechange.ca.gov, which is the state's climate change portal. We have a number of other efforts in process to inform the adaptation strategy, like the sea level rise guidance effort that's in process. I think you mentioned a little bit earlier, Joe. Trying to figure out what to leave out here. So I think Bruce asked me to touch base on cap and trade a little bit, but I also want to give an update on AB 32. This isn't adaptation related so much, but it is an important part of the discussion. The governor's budget that was just released identified, we were expecting in the 2012-2013 budget year about $200 million, in the 2013-2014 budget year about $400 million coming in for the investment plan. The three-year investment plan is currently in process to figure out how to spend that money in an informed and effective manner. The governor's budget outlines a couple of priority items we really want to see move forward on that. One is transportation emissions, another is electricity and water conveyance emissions, and another is agriculture and forestry, which could be offsets. It could be emissions and management of those resources. So the 2013-2014 years for cap and trade is a pretty narrow scope. In 2015, it gets expanded to fuels, which would capture about 85% of the emissions within California, which is really exciting. But there's also an understanding that cap and trade can only go so far. There's a number of other regulatory and market mechanisms to control emissions within California, and a piece of that is local government. So as we've talked about the infrastructure plan, and moving forward, there's an acknowledgement that local government and regional efforts need to be included in the discussion. We don't know what it looks like right now. We know the 10% will likely be allocated towards disadvantaged communities. But what overall percentage gets allocated to local and regional efforts, we're still discussing internally. The AB 32 scoping plan is currently being updated, and this is also an opportunity to include more robust discussions about local and regional efforts, and the state hazard mitigation plan being developed through CalEMA is also being updated right now. So 2013 is a very exciting year, as Bruce mentioned earlier, for climate change, particularly adaptation. There's almost every comprehensive document in the state that needs to refer to climate impacts and adaptation is being updated this year. There'll be a number of opportunities for input, guidance, and support of these efforts, and we hope you can engage in the process moving forward. As always, you can feel free to contact me, and I can get you to the right contact at the state. Sometimes it's a little bit hard trying to figure out who the right person is at the state to contact, and Bruce can give you my contact information or talk with me after the meeting. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Michael, and I just want to thank Michael and OPR. They get it, that climate adaptation has got to be done with locals and regional collaboratives and all, and they're helping us with helping the other state agencies that we need to be working with to also understand that better. So I want to thank Michael and Ken Alex and Wade Crowfoot and Louise Bedsworth. Thanks.
Any questions or comments?
Yes, Amy.
Great. Michael, thank you for being here, and I appreciate the work of the governor's office. I actually represent the Contra Costa cities in this dialogue. My comments and questions sort of pick up on what Mayor Bates said. You know, one of the realities, we're looking long term, but we are starting to see the impacts in our communities of this weather change, basically. And two of the cities in our county just experienced impact from this huge rainstorm that the damage to caused by these storms in both cities represented about 10% of our annual operating budget. So when I say to somebody, well, we had $1 million damage, that doesn't sound so big when you're dealing with $250 billion, you know, in terms of the Bay Area, say, our transportation plan, but it represents 10% of a budget. And so I think cities are very concerned and starting to see that these issues, you know, are really significant and are starting to face. And that's why, number one, the point that Bruce has raised about these clusters, these planning clusters. So you say take a section of an area where bring together all the agencies that are dealing with this, I think is really important as you're looking at how best to model this discussion that's going to happen. So if I were to use Contra Costa, we have areas of our county, our transportation network is divided into four subregions that have similar terrain, geography, that kind of thing. But the other thing I wanted to ask you, I'm looking at this list, and you know, you start talking about general plans and things. What is the governor, or can you talk about, or either provide an answer, or maybe looking as you're looking in the future, the funding money that'll be available for these local groups to do the planning? Because when we look at, say, general plan updates, you're talking about millions of dollars that the cities really don't have. So if we're looking at meaningful planning that needs to happen, if you could either talk now, you mentioned a little bit in terms of the discussions here right now, you're looking at how those funds might be allocated. So I don't know if you have any more information to shed, or if you're still in process, just, you know, I know you'll be considering all of our comments relative to if we really want to get the work done, where does it need to happen, and how can we provide the funds to do it?
Yeah, and that's a legitimate question, and I think one that we hear very regularly, is how do we fund it all? And it's a challenging discussion we are engaged with at the state level in almost every single one of these documents. The hazard mitigation planning process is a really unique opportunity to link into federal resources, and right now there's not a strong linkage to climate change at the federal level. But we do have an opportunity right now, particularly with this administration and with some of the conversations we've had with folks in D.C., to link up to extreme weather events and some of these other immediate impact issues. And I think in our conversation with our federal partners through the state hazard mitigation plan process, one of the big things we're trying to identify is what are the funding sources to be proactive in planning. And then once disasters do happen, how do we plan appropriately for the next one after that? And so there's a couple of different funding streams through FEMA and through CalEMA that we're hoping to allocate a little bit more effectively to climate impacts and adaptation discussions. But through the California Adaptation Strategy, there's also an acknowledgement that if we're going to ask our state agencies and departments to do more, and for our regional folks to do more with our local partners, everybody's going to need to work a little bit harder to identify how these linkages happen. And at every stage in the process, it's been acknowledged that that's going to cost more money or more staff time and disrupt day-to-day operations in order to make sure the planning happens effectively. So we are looking at funding mechanisms for that. Our budget is balanced right now. But we do have challenges moving forward in making sure we keep it that way. But that conversation is happening right now. Unfortunately, I don't have any details, but maybe I'll come back next year and I'll have a full budget plan for you to identify how we're going to fund adaptation.
Mark followed by the other Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This was originally my question before was about the four agencies, but as listening to you, Michael, and the general plan guidelines of the state, and maybe it's a statewide effort. And hearing Joe when he was talking about the four noble truths of the four noble agencies, you know, and who could, if you're in the business sector, who can, you know, hope to meet all of those noble truths 100%? And in general plan guidelines, how can the state help local governments, you know, get to a goal that is very diverse, has many components to it, and is almost impossible, unless you're Einstein, creating a grand unified theory to come up with some way to get around all of it and effectuate a decent private sector project or even a public sector project. So in many of our communities, we have project labor agreements. I'm just wondering about the concept of a project sustainability agreement, where if it rises to the level of satisfying not 100% of the each agency's needs, maybe 80%, and that it gets a pass, maybe a platinum pass, to go through the EIR, to go through a CEQA process quicker and easier. It's a reward for the private sector for being above and beyond the goals of a CEQA-oriented world. Where we're trying not to harm the existing environment, but if you take a more progressive view and say, well, what if this plan is actually improving the future environment? Shouldn't we get a credit for that, and shouldn't we get a pass and a guidance through the process and a reward, so to speak, for being forward-thinking and meeting these goals? And obviously it would have to be some type of a discussion, maybe an open source type of discussion, including business and all the other stakeholders, but something like that, a golden pass or a platinum pass, that could help get to our goals but also not hinder business, and also be a model that we could say that we're not layering on regulation, we're actually providing a pathway that gets to our goals and economic goals as well.
I think we're looking at a bronze and silver passes, but you know, we may not get to platinum. There's no secret that there's a number of discussions around CEQA streamlining this year occurring in the legislature. We're engaged in some of those discussions, and we're also thinking a little bit outside the box on how can we make it easier for good projects to move forward. It's part of the work on SB 226 and the MPIL streamlining work that was processed last year through our office, and those regulations were just adopted earlier the end of last month. So we're very aware that we need to make sure that good projects can get approved and approved faster. So we're looking at that.
Mark, then Ezra.
And maybe I just wanted to build on that from our own local attempt at coming up with a climate action plan. I think as we sort of embed this in a general plan and tie it to CEQA, it could really, if we are not already in the mud, it could sink us much deeper in the mud in terms of trying to get anything done about anything. And there's a lot of low-hanging fruit in terms of what we can do that is really obvious. It doesn't take a lot of accounting, doesn't take a lot of study. Those should be the things that we're asked to do. And then there's some minuscule accounting mechanisms of whether we're going to grow a tree or plant crops, and trying to figure out whether that's meaningful or not. And a lot of money is spent talking about that, a lot of mitigation ideas, and to me it doesn't really matter. It may be counterproductive. We ought to be figuring out how to grow food. That's probably the most vulnerable thing in this whole process, and yet we're talking about planting trees, which seem to burn regularly in this state. And so it's that kind of discussion I'd like to avoid, because I think it's a lot of energy, a lot of capital, a lot of hard feelings, and it don't think it really accomplishes much. And if you tie that to CEQA and general plans, we're just not going to get anywhere. And so it sort of goes with your gold pass. It's like, you know, let's really do the obvious. There's some really good things we know we can do, and let's just do that, and let's put off the rest of the discussion. You know, if you want to do it, but don't make it part of CEQA, don't make it part of a general plan update. So.
Yes, Mike, I assume you were here when Bruce was going through these large screens of all the different agencies, special districts, stakeholders. And if we were to really try to complete that for even just half of the southern portion of the Bay Area, it would go on page after page after page. Is it realistic for the regional agencies to be having to make that long march? Or does it make more sense to operate at the regional level and tell these districts that there should be some sort of reporting relationship on some of the subject matter and use your regional agencies to help organize this? It would be a lot more efficient, and I think figuring out how to fund it would be a lot less expensive than trying to go through the whole local government process and trying to monitor that. So how much thought have you really given about using regional agencies to more efficiently accomplish a lot of at least the scanning work?
Yeah, I think we feel that regional partnerships with the state are essential for our success. We know that if we tried to reach out to every single one of our jurisdictions within the state of California, we wouldn't get nearly as far unless we worked with our regional partners. So I think we're on the same page on that. It's identifying exactly what that looks like moving forward. Part of our work with ARCA is to make that conversation easier with multiple regions in the state. So as the Alliance moves forward and matures a little bit more, really looking forward to having some of these deeper conversations, and I know that the regions are as well.
Michael, thanks for being here. Julie, did you want to?
I just wanted to ask if we get copies of the slides, or
sure.
if they could be posted on the website.
Yeah. Why don't we? If, can it be? Can we post them?
They're posted on. They will be posted on the
Great.
Website. Our new website has a little more functionality.
Great. All right, Michael. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Michael.
All right. Okay, that was informational. Moving on to item five, which is a follow-up from a previous discussion. This is consideration of approaches for staff and consultant support. And this was also discussed at the JPC executive. And have we handed out, Will, did you hand out? So there's a draft job description, and I'm going to have Larry Goldspan go through it. And I think we talked about what the role, at a previous meeting, what the role of staff should be here and who they should be responsible to. And so, Larry, why don't you go through what we have?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The you have in front of you a page and a half of a somewhat informal but, I think, full of information job description. This was put together in great part due to consultation with the chairman, with a couple of elected officials, and this has gone through some editing by the executive directors of each of the four agencies. You will see that the job duties are essentially to support the JPC as a policy coordinating body by doing a great deal of things, including policy analysis, coordinating the regional economic development strategy in consultation with external groups, making sure that the JPC policy efforts are integrated internally so that the work of the consultants, of Bruce, make sure that that's integrated, ensure that the person works hard at ensuring that as we go forward, we evolve into a more comprehensive regional effort. We assist, and that person ultimately also assists the chair in administrative duties. So, who is going to be this super person who takes on this role? Somebody who either has worked at one of the four regional agencies, has worked with one of those four regional agencies, or with similar institutions. A person who knows how to spin plates and make sure that they don't fall. A person who understands public policy and trends and knows how to integrate such things, and a person who is good externally as well, so that he or she can generate support for what the JPC needs to do. And then finally, and from our standpoint, the most important thing, somebody with whom we can work. The reporting relationship. The person will act as an independent consultant in under contract with MTC. The executive committee will do the interviewing and do the recommendation to the full JPC for ratification of that person. And that person will report directly to the chair and executive committee of the JPC.
Is there anything else you want me to
describe?
So this is really for us to discuss, modify, approve. Scott?
I don't see any educational requirements.
We figure that anybody who takes this job
oh, really?
Should have as little as possible.
No, I mean, I'm qualified.
Right. Given some recent discussions we had at ABAG, it's public. That's why we're raising it. That's why Scott's raising it, I think.
We'll put in what
right.
needs to be put in.
What needs to be put in? I guess I'm curious.
Maybe at reflecting on some of the discussion we had yesterday, it's a minimum of a bachelor's degree, and you know whether or not a master's degree is required or desirable is maybe the issue. Ezra, you know, remembers this conversation yesterday. You know, there may be very qualified people who've done this work who have a bachelor's degree and don't have a master's degree, so it doesn't seem we have to require a master's degree.
Well, I just think some
yeah.
level of educational
right. yes.
requirement should be...
Other than included. A GED, you're saying. Okay.
I'm still able to apply.
Right.
This may be just me, but item 6, assist with initiatives as directed by the chair. I got kind of a problem with that, because if that's the point, then, and nothing against you, John.
Yeah, no, I'm just
saying, I think it should say something, the chair and the board, or
the chair,
the chair
the
in conjunction
committee.
With
right.
the board.
Yeah, I think that's what you intend. I think, in fact, the only real initiatives that they're working on are those initiatives approved by the full JPC. Right. And I think what you may mean to say are follow-up duties to prepare for the meetings and things like that. I think that's what you're sort of referring to there, to the extent that the chair is saying we need information for the meetings consistent with all our initiatives. I think that's the idea there. We can reflect that. And the idea then, if there's approval here, then with this document, this description, and the approach of the interviews and the report, we can go out and advertise for it. Mary?
Mr. Chairman, just a clarification of who is represented on the executive committee.
The executive committee is made up of the chair and vice chair of each of the four regional agencies, and they're each supported by the staff, the executive directors, and the chair of the JPC. But that it would come back to this JPC for full approval.
John.
Julie?
Yeah, I think one of the things we need to clarify in here is who's doing the clerical work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we need the brain power. We need the person who can do all the coordination and the outreach and knows how to manage the discussion and walk that tightrope. But right now, I think Fred Kestrow is doing
right.
most of the clerical support, and we need to figure out how to manage that and make sure that's handled, because that's the part that bogs down the Brainiac. You know, quite frankly, that's a burden.
Right.
And I think that Will would certainly agree that some of that mundane getting the agendas together and emailing them out and making sure the minutes are written and all of that, and making sure you check for a quorum. I mean, last night at 9:30, we were still checking for a quorum for this meeting. And, in fact, Amy and I canceled another meeting mm-hmm. we were supposed to be at today in order to be here to make the quorum. But those are things that are a clerical burden if this person has to do all that. And I think we need
right.
to figure out how among the four agencies we share that or supply
right.
that.
What, well, why don't you describe a little bit how it's, you know, some of your thoughts on this, given you've been in this position. I know Fred plays a very important role here, and I know there's staff support from each of the four regional agencies. So what's your thought of, given how it's worked so far?
Well, first off, in looking at this job description, one, I realized that if I applied for it, I wouldn't be qualified. And secondly, if I was selected, I wouldn't want it. Because a lot of the work is coordination, and that is what I'm most proud of, what we've accomplished over the past year. I think we've really increased the capacity of the JPC to provide the kind of coordination and regional leadership that you should be doing. But there is simply a lot of work that is it is just inevitable. And the staff of the JPC is really Bruce and whoever is selected for this position. We do get a lot of support from all of the agencies in terms of clerical support, but it is still, you got to make sure somebody actually did follow through and check on the quorum. And I would say it only amounts to 10% of the work, but it's a ugly 10%.
Right. So maybe as we move forward with this position, there will be further discussion with ABAG, and ABAG's been very generous about the staff support, and that really hasn't been an issue. I mean, Fred does a great job. Pardon?
Fred is overloaded, so I
yes.
do think we should have a discussion about it.
Okay, got it. Right. So is there a motion on this approach?
I'll move it as, okay. you know, as long as the amendments that were put
yeah.
into it are
with the spirit of the amendments that we've discussed.
Second.
Yeah. Second. Motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Can the committee be emailed what educational...
Yes.
Well, I would like to know what...
Why don't we do this, Larry, with the final version, which includes the educational, some of the other changes, email it out to everybody on the JPC, and how... And ultimately, because folks here can also help get the word out and publicize this to get somebody on board.
Just don't start responding
Great.
To it.
All right. Board comment before we go to public comment. I want to say this is Will Travis's last meeting. And I know on behalf of everyone to express our appreciation, some of us have worked with Will, and he had an official retirement from BCDC. I guess he's not planning a big retirement here from JPC. But I think you were clearly the right person to step into this initial role to move along, especially the climate adaptation plan. And Will, just appreciate all of your heart, your work, your public service, your career. I know you're going to go off and spend more time in Italy.
Well, actually, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do hope to spend a little bit more time traveling, but you will see me around because I'm going to become much more actively engaged in particularly the sea level rise issue. Bruce mentioned this book, High Tide on Main Street. John Englander and I are collaborating on some projects. He's the author of this. I will be doing some teaching on the issue of how do we plan for sea level rise. I will be doing some consulting, and I serve on a number of boards of organizations that are dealing with particularly sea level rise and climate change. So I will be continue to be engaged. I love the Bay Area. I always come back to the bottom line that it doesn't matter how successful we are in protecting the Bay and the Bay Area if we don't have a prosperous region as well. So it's always achieving those two things at the same time. And that's what I will be devoting the rest of my life to. And I thank you for the opportunity and the privilege of working with you.
Thank you. And maybe you'll be there at the mic or sitting over there and making a presentation to us at a future meeting.
I would not put that beyond the realm of
Great. Mary?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Will, you and I didn't work very closely together, but I know you're greatly admired and will be missed and look forward to your future work. But I also want to say, Mr. Chairman, go San Francisco / Santa Clara / Bay Area 49ers.
Yes, yes. You know, and unfortunately... I am happy Mark Green is not here because last night he said he was rooting for the Falcons.
That's why he's
not
here.
That's why he's not here. That's right, exactly. That's
he
lost, yes. Any other comments before we go to public comment? I see, Jack, we got a Spare the Air tomorrow. The email just came in, so Spare the Air day tomorrow. Okay, all right. Thank you, everybody. Public comment. Jane Kramer.
I'm Jane Kramer, and I'm speaking for myself, and I have a comment, maybe a suggestion. It's on air quality and infill development guidelines, and it concerns the juncture of human biology with its environment, and where the rubber hits the road is the real issue. So when you are looking for researchers and you're looking for information as to what impacts environment has on human biology, you need, I think, to look to researchers and medical practitioners who on a day-to-day basis are dealing with ecological medical issues, not conventional issues, not, okay? And that translates into practical issues like a developer is going to do a building. What kind of materials do you put into the walls? And you only get that kind of information from somebody who is dealing with human ecology on a day-to-day basis. That's the only place it comes from. And that stuff is reliable. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And I do, Bruce, I want to acknowledge all of your hard work. I mean, we are really fortunate to have, I think, your work. You've been involved in this. You've been great in bringing this together. You're coordinating so many things. And I think everybody here, I mean, we should all be proud. We are leading the nation in this work. And so this is really impactful, important stuff. Great. All right. So with that, the meeting's adjourned.